This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Dennis Mangers, who's the president of the California Cable and Telecommunications Association, the CCTA. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tell us what the California Assembly did yesterday with AB 2987 and how you feel about it.
Well, obviously the cable television industry does not feel good about the outcome. The speaker and the chair of our oversight committee both indicated to their colleagues that they would fix this bill before they brought it to the assembly. And instead, they asked their colleagues to give them essentially a courtesy vote, promising that they would now fix it over on the Senate side. But it's not fixed from a number of standpoints, the most important of which are that it's not a level playing field because it specifically keeps cable incumbent cable operators in their locally imposed and costly local franchise agreements until their franchises expire. And it gives fewer requirements to the phone companies in the form of a new state franchise. So that they can start off with lighter rules.
So is this a little bit, would you say, like a horse race where the gate opens and some of the horses get to race out with just the jockey and a few pounds of weight, and the some other horses have to race with large lead weights around their hindquarters?
That would be a very good analogy. In many cases, we've been asked to, at our own expense, link all of the institutions in a community into an institutional network. We've been asked to provide free service to schools and libraries. We've in many cases been asked to give large contributions to nonprofit organizations in a community. And so in many of those cases, before this bill came along, we had these very heavy obligations, social obligations imposed upon us.
And are those ongoing for you and
yes,
for the cable companies under this bill?
Yeah, in many cases, till the end of the franchises, some of which go for 20 years.
Can you put a rough dollar estimate on what that will cost the cable companies to meet those mandates?
Because every single city and county has a different franchise with different requirements.
Right, but are we talking tens, hundreds of millions, or billions of dollars? Or?
Oh, you know, certainly tens of millions.
Tens of millions.
The difference. And so, as you know, when you get into a competitive marketplace, everything is about containing costs. So that you can, in the competitive spirit, reduce prices to compete for customers. And if we're bearing far many more costs, and the phone companies have been relieved of those costs, then there's no pretense that this is a fair and level playing field. So the first thing that disappointed us was that the Assembly did not take the responsibility of fixing these things while they had the bill in their control. And we tried to be helpful. We submitted amendments. We attended every meeting. We've tried to be constructive parties to the discussion, but the phone companies prevailed.
Was one of those amendments a so-called abrogation amendment that would have allowed the cable companies to abrogate their existing franchise agreements with the municipalities?
Well, abrogation comes with opt-in. If under some circumstances you're allowed to opt into the new state franchise rule,
right,
then obviously the terms and conditions of your existing contracts are abrogated.
So the cable companies wanted to add an amendment that would allow them to simultaneously opt in under the new terms and abrogate their existing franchise agreements.
Yes, because if the state legislature decides that they don't think that local franchising is an efficient and effective way to do business in the competitive environment of today and the future, then they ought to decide that that's the case for all providers.
So it's a case of what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
That's exactly right. And in this case, the goose is stuck with most of the obligations and the gander flies free. And it's not a regular gander. These are phone companies, each of which is larger than all cable companies in America combined. So they don't need special deals in the first place.
So, what was the fate of your effort to get that opt-in slash abrogation amendment added to the bill?
The speaker would not accept it. In fact, he would not allow it to be discussed.
And it was solely his call on that?
Well, he is the author, and of course he's not just a regular member. He
right.
is the speaker. And, you know, his members quite properly accord him the respect due the speaker. And yesterday was a perfect example of exercising the discipline of the speaker. The members kept the debate short. There were very few embarrassing or probing questions. very little debate, and of course, a nearly unanimous vote.
77-0 is the way I...
Yes, it started off with more abstentions, but by the end of the evening, I think people got the message.
Okay, now there's a section of the bill, I don't want to read the whole thing, but it says, among other things, that... or maybe I will. It's the intent of the legislature, this is in the bill as it passed, it is the intent of the legislature that the principles for competition in the provision of video service will require a level playing field to assure that competition is fair, will require widespread build-out of state-of-the-art services so that competition can benefit the greatest number of customers, and will prohibit discrimination, redlining, and service abandonment so that a lack of competition will not be detrimental to customers. This language is a lot more vague than a lot of the other provisions of the bill. Do you think that this offers enough protection against discrimination, redlining, and service abandonment compared to what the cable companies are already required to do?
No, there's no question that it doesn't. A simple reading makes it clear that it doesn't. And frankly, the legislators don't pretend that it does. Those principles were put in there because the assembly, the authors, were unable to develop a consensus or to develop operative language that would make those high and noble concepts actually turn them into operative language in the bill.
Now, the interview I just had with Assemblymember Levine focused in part on that, and he said that that remains something where a more specific language needs to be produced. What's your preference for the language in that area?
Well, first of all, we think there ought to be one of several variations on opt-in for cable operators. Either, as we've suggested, on the operative date of the bill, we all start off on the same rules, or there be some triggering mechanism, such as if a telephone company comes into one of our franchise areas and pulls permits and begins construction, that could be a trigger for opt-in to the new rules so that we could prepare to compete with a force as large as one of these telephone companies, or three, when they actually commence service in one of our areas, at the very least, that would be the last, but at the very least, we should be able to opt into the new regulations when we're staring their competition in the face. So one of the amendments has to be that, or there's no pretense at a level playing field. And then another has to do with the widespread deployment of state-of-the-art technology.
Right.
That's code language, meaning that you can't pretend that you're meeting your requirements by pumping satellite and DSL, as AT&T wanted to do with its home zone product. You really have to put your state-of-the-art Fios in the case of Verizon and Project Lightspeed in the case of AT&T. You have to tell the legislature, what's your plan for the widespread deployment of that, your state-of-the-art technology?
So do you believe that the language as it now exists in its rather vague form is sufficient to preclude
the
companies from offering satellite service and claiming that that's state-of-the-art?
No, it definitely is not sufficient, and that's what Mr. Levine, I think, meant when he said that we'll need more and less vague language. And that's exactly what the Senate, I think, intends to do. We've proposed, for instance, that the phone companies be required to deploy their wireline service within their service territories within 5 years. It took us three to upgrade our systems for state-of-the-art video. So we think five would be reasonable for companies with their capitalization, with benchmarks of 20% of their service territory per year. That would be one suggestion. I also understand that the Senate is looking at the New Jersey bill that recently passed, in which Verizon agreed to build out 60 of New Jersey's most densely populated cities in 6 years, and to build them out entirely with its Fios fiber-to-the-home system.
Would you like to see something comparable in the California legislation?
Yes, I would. My view is that we chose an appropriate number for a state of this size and held them to that kind of obligation, then the purpose of this bill would really be met. And that is competitive choice. The phone companies say they want to give Californians a competitive choice, but the bill right now would let them give that choice only to the wealthiest neighborhoods, and there's no obligation to serve everybody else.
Assemblymember Levine and I talked about the New Jersey principles, and he mentioned that several cities, including Fresno and maybe even Sacramento, aren't dense enough under the New Jersey regulations to require a build-out. How how would you modify those rates in order to be comparable in California?
That figure was reached by looking at New Jersey demographics. Obviously, the Senate consultants are looking at California demographics now, and they would decide what density number needs to be in the bill.
But you're saying that general approach with different figures...
Conceptually, that approach would work, and you would just need different figures to make sure that the cities you most wanted to see served throughout were included.
Now, I know you speak for the California cable industry, not the cable industry in the whole country, but what's the impact, as you see it, of what's happening here in California and the passage yesterday of AB 2987 on the debate both in other states and in Washington in terms of state franchising or national franchising for telephone companies to offer video service?
Well, obviously, California is a very important state, and so what happens here often has an impact on what happens in other states, kind of a domino effect, and sometimes it can even inform the national process. And I could tell you, since I've been here 25 years with cable, that many bills we've passed here have ended up in, like, the 96 Telecom Act. So everybody is watching here with some interest. I think you'll find in the press that there's kind of a sense of a shock at the degree to which this bill got through the assembly with that vote, as unfinished and unpolished and unrefined as it is. So there will be a lot of attention here to find out what the Senate and we have a check and balance system here. The bill obviously is tipped to the enormous advantage of the phone companies right now, but everyone expects the Senate to approach it objectively and fairly and try to provide a good law here that all of us who will live with the law can deal with.
So, okay. I want to focus on what's going to happen in the Senate in a minute, but I wanted to finish up on the national issue first. I had conversations this week with staffers on the House and Senate side in Washington, and apparently there's a bill in Congressman Barton's committee that would establish a national franchise. But on the Senate side, there seems to be, under the bill that Senator Stevens would be offering, if it does get offered, and that's what we're going to talk about, provisions that would let municipalities maintain most of the control. And I've got the staffers in Washington looking into whether or not that would preempt a state legislation. But all that is moot if the Senate and the House don't do anything. And both, to greater or lesser degrees, Assemblymember Levine and Tim McCallion from Verizon seem to believe that the U.S. Congress will not act on this bill this year and possibly next year. What's your take on that, and how important is that as a way to, in terms of how it impacts your efforts here in California?
Well, I agree with Mr. McCallion and Lloyd Levine, and with most pundits in Washington, for that matter, that it's unlikely that the Congress gets it done in an election year, with so few days left remaining in their session. So
that means what California does will be the law in California without any concerns about federal preemption or any kind of other modification.
Well, not necessarily. It means that until a national bill passes,
right,
that's the case. And
right,
then we'll have to see if the national bill provides an exclusion for states like California that have passed a state franchising law.
Right, which it might or it might not.
Might or might not. So we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. Talking about the Senate, what's the roadmap for the bill's consideration in the Senate and the timetable?
Well, I'm really gratified by the process so far. The Senate President Pro Tem, Don Parada, says that he intends to support his chair and her efforts to develop a fair piece of legislation. The chair, Martha Escutia, is a very good listener and has met with all the stakeholders, and she seems resolved to require some kind of deployment expectation that would prohibit anti-competitive cream skimming, and also to provide a level playing field through some opt-in variation. So we're gratified that she really seems to want to develop a piece of fair legislation that will lead to fair competition on a level playing field. The Senate Republican leader has appointed two of his colleagues, Senators Ashburn and Margette, to Ride Point. We met with them yesterday. They too seem resolved to approach this fairly and in a balanced way and to assure ultimately as level playing field as possible. So I believe this bill will be amended on the Senate side. The people there seem really resolved, as I say, to do this properly. It will probably come up on either the 20th or the 27th of June for its policy committee hearing, and then the same process as the Assembly, and ultimately back for concurrence and Senate amendments.
Talk a little bit about your own personal involvement in the lobbying. Who were you talking to? What were you saying to them? What were they responding with?
Well, we didn't wait for to start lobbying the Senate until it was out of the Assembly. We started with the Senate quite a while ago.
Right.
And found that everybody on the Senate also believes, for the most part, that there ought to be a bill. I would say it's fair to say that most senators believe, as most Assembly members do, that the era of going city by city, county by county, for franchises is probably no longer efficient and effective.
And do you and the CCTA also believe that that's the case?
We have been satisfied with our relationship with local governments and thought it wasn't that onerous for the phone companies, but it kind of is moot how we feel about it at this point, because the legislature, I would say, that it's kind of moot because the legislators are pretty well unanimous in their view that they need to develop a new state paradigm.
Would it be fair to say that this is our third conversation about this, and it sounds to me like you're sort of moving more, under the force of circumstances, moving to the position not that this shouldn't be passed, but that the cable companies ought to get in on the same principles as the phone companies?
That's a very fair characterization. Now that we've learned that the legislature almost unanimously believes that it's time for a new model. Obviously, one has to be adaptive here in a setting
right.
like this, and we are.
Now, your allies on this so far have been the municipalities. If you tilt too much towards saying this is okay as long as we're included, are you going to leave them in the lurch? Are they going to be on your side anymore? How is that likely to play?
Well, that would normally be a huge concern, as you can imagine.
Right.
But in this case, they too appear to have gotten the message, and all seem to be in the same adaptive mode we are. I'm just trying to identify those things that are still best left in their hands, like, for instance, control of the rights away so that they can help determine where those big phone company refrigerator-sized boxes are going to be located, and so that they can administer customer service standards so that when customers call City Hall and complain about cable service, you don't have to go to the State Department of Consumer Affairs. Your city will still have some ability to deal with it, and of course, the cities are mostly concerned that they get their a percentage of gross revenues as for use of their public rights away.
And the bill as constituted does include equal provisions for payment of franchise fees to localities of by the phone companies and the cable companies, doesn't
That's
it?
Correct.
Okay, but it would preclude the what I guess is sometimes referred to as painting the mayor's house requirements from the cities to cable companies that you've had to labor under, but that they wouldn't have to.
That's right. The legislature believes that it's important to standardize now.
And what's your reading of how the cities will feel about giving that up? Are you saying that they're resigned to giving up that part of the procedure?
Well, I don't want to speak for them,
right.
but it's been my observation the last couple of weeks that they, like we, see the handwriting on the wall, that we are moving toward a new model, and that everyone has to be adaptive in that regard. And I think some of them are aware that a few cities have abused the privilege of local franchising by asking things of their incumbent cable operators for which there was no nexus to the service itself.
So you're saying you won't miss those, and you're saying mostly the cities won't miss those either.
I think most cities that tried to be reasonable
right.
with regard to the bandwidth they wanted us to dedicate and the PEG support and all that,
right.
I think they won't miss it either.
Okay, so only the bad apples will really be unhappy about that.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
Okay, I wanted to talk about the eventuality and your response to it if the bill passes without the modifications that you believe might be made in the Senate. Is there any likelihood that the cable companies would bring litigation on the grounds that they're being discriminated against under a law that allows the phone companies to have an easier time of it than they have?
Well, we can point to the Texas precedent where that state legislature, under a similar blitz by the phone companies, did finally pass a bill that was signed into law that trapped their cable operators in existing contracts and let the phone companies go free. And cable is suing the state in that regard.
And what kind of arguments are they making? On what basis?
Well, it's obviously a violation of the equal protection
of the federal constitution.
Yeah, that all of us, are afforded under our constitution, that we have a right to expect that like services will be like regulated. And if government actually steps out and chooses a winner by virtue of the regulatory break it gives some over others, that's unfair, it's unconstitutional, and it deserves to be litigated.
Okay, let's say you litigate it and you lose. What kind of strategy overall will the cable companies be? They're not going to go out of business the next day. What kind of changes or adaptations do you envision that the cable companies will be making in California in order to meet the, as you characterize it, an unfair competitive threat from the phone companies?
Well, that's several leaps ahead.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to speculate.
You don't want to talk about that yet?
Yeah, and it really is rather more a business-oriented question of how one adapts your business on the operational side
right.
to these political realities, and that's not my bailiwick.
To what extent do you believe that the public images of the phone company and the public image of the cable companies has influenced the outcome of this debate so far?
That would be hard to tell. Both have a long record of service to the public with rates and customer service and other implications. So I'm sure you couldn't pretend that you came into a representative body like this without varying personal experiences with each of us being considered. But I don't think that's the guiding factor. I think the guiding factor here is that legislators really do, and probably quite properly, think that we ought to have more competition, that we ought to incent more broadband deployment, that we ought to be doing everything we can to change our archaic governmental rules so that there's more potential for competition and infrastructure development and the potential for lower prices. And that's what's motivating them. And I think they're delighted that they have an incumbent cable operator that's upgraded and made the investment we have in this state, $10 billion in just the last 10 years to upgrade our facilities, and I think they'll be equally delighted if phone companies are willing to make that commitment.
Could you compare the technical capabilities of the existing cable plant with the planned Project Lightspeed and Fios systems in terms of ability to deliver multiple video channels and voice over IP and broadband internet?
I'm not a scientist or a technologist, but I'm told by those in our industry who are, that there is nothing that Project Lightspeed or Fios can do that our infrastructure can't do. It's just a question of ascertaining market need and then meeting the market interest with products that our infrastructure is quite capable of providing.
Okay, now here's a question that no one else has really been able to address or wanted to. Let's say the bill passes and goes into effect January 1st, 2007. How long do you think it's going to take for AT&T and Verizon to actually roll out the service that they're arguing they need this bill in order to provide it in an economic way?
Well, that's a very good question. Fios for Verizon is a very expensive process, taking fiber to the home, and Wall Street is not entirely sure, as you can tell, whether or not that's a prudent investment. And AT&T is finding that Project Lightspeed doesn't actually work very well yet. And the Microsoft software and other things have not yet become sufficiently refined. And there's some speculation in the technical press of this last couple of weeks that they might diminish their focus on Project Lightspeed in favor of other technologies. That coupled with the fact that there's no track record for these two companies ever staying the course with video. You'll recall Verizon came into video and abandoned their plan in Calabasas and sold off their interest in Ventura. AT&T bought TCI, but did not do a very good job as a cable operator and ended up selling it to Comcast for about half what they paid for it. So they don't have a very good record in terms of staying power with a video product. And they'll have to convince Wall Street that this investment is appropriate, prudent, and they'll have to convince people that it will work.
So does that mean there's
For instance, in Texas, you know, they got a bill passed,
right.
But so far they have yet to serve anybody.
This discussion has led me to consider an unusual scenario here. Is it possible, from your point of view, that if the bill passes, that Verizon and AT&T won't build out very fast, and that cable franchises will expire on a rolling basis, and that the cable companies will then be able to apply for the state-issued authorization and start offering service under those principles before the phone companies get around to building out their networks?
Well, that too is speculative, and I couldn't imagine knowing, but it certainly is a one possible scenario, and we'll just have to wait and see how that all plays out.
Okay, good. Finally, if people want to get in touch with you and or notify their legislators how they feel about this, what do you recommend?
I recommend they go to tvforall.org.
Okay.
And there are petitions to sign. There's information there for them on the subject, and I'd be delighted if they did seek more information.
All right. Well, one last trick question. Do you think all this is going to lead to better television programming?
I don't think any of this has anything to do with television programming. It has to do with distribution and competition. It doesn't have anything to do with programming.
So we can't count on higher quality programming, just more of it at different...
Well, my personal bias is that there's a lot of high quality programming out there. You've got a lot of choice when you subscribe to cable. You've got a lot of choice when you subscribe to satellite. And Verizon and AT&T intend to provide the same programming we do. So if you're a discriminating viewer and you subscribe to a package from any of those providers, you're likely to have some very good qualitative choices. And I don't think this bill will have much to do with that.
Okay, one last question here. As in some of the discussions here, actually one that I had with Eric Brown, who's the chairman of the board of your organization, we talked about moving new technologies into areas like public access, where franchise requirements now hold the cable incumbents responsible for building studios and maintaining them and making equipment available and so on. While I was interviewing him with the $350 handheld camera, editing it on my computer and posting it on the internet for global and perpetual audiences, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on whether the cable companies might want to approach the municipalities about, regardless of what happens with AB 2987, about upgrading and modernizing sort of the end result rather than the process by which they encourage the production and distribution of local programming.
Well, I think those are decisions that each cable company will have to make in the context of the marketplace. What effect competition has on their ability to finance such efforts like that, what communities they serve that have any interest, where market demand lies. I mean, you have to keep in mind that right now if you took a poll, most people would want more movies or more sports or more, food network or more handy hobby stuff, you know, whatever their interest. And so that's the kind of thing that's always been ascertained at the local level. And I think probably still ought to be.
Okay. Wrap up and tell us your overall view on what happened yesterday with AB 2987 and what you'd like to see happen going forward.
Well, just to conclude, I was disappointed at the outcome. I had hoped for a far healthier debate. I had hoped the Assembly would resolve the unresolved issues before they sent it to the Senate. And I certainly wish that it had been a more balanced and fair product. But it isn't, and it wasn't, and it didn't. And so now the only option is without recrimination or without whining, go forward. We have a check and balance system. A bill like this is supposed to go to the other house, and it will, one hope, get a more judicious and sober review and end up with a more balanced product. And that's what we'll all be working toward as it goes to the Senate.
Okay, good. And I hope we can keep talking about it and keep our listeners up to a minute.
It'll be my pleasure. Thanks very much. This has been a great opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Bye.